Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, Associate Director for Communication Technology and Programs here at KEI, and I will be your host today. In this episode, we sit down with KEI Vice President Mark Tokola. Mark spent 38 years in the Foreign Service, including posts in Brussels, London, Sarajevo, Baghdad, and of course in Seoul, where he served as Deputy Chief of Mission. Throughout this time, Mark has participated in planning many presidential visits and summits. With President Park Geun-hye in D.C. now to visit President Obama, Mark and I take a look at presidential summits as a tool of diplomacy. We also look forward to this particular summit, which will take place on Friday, October 16, 2015. Mark, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
First, can you give us a little background on your experience as a diplomat? What summits have you been involved in planning and executing in the past?
As you mentioned, I joined the Foreign Service in 1976 and retired in 2014. So many Foreign Service officers don't get the chance to work on presidential summits because they're not that frequent. I was lucky to be in a few places where summits happen. So I was trying to count back. I think I was involved in 9 summits. The first was President Reagan's visit to Strasbourg in May of 1985. To speak to European Parliament. The last I did was in September 2014 when President Obama came to Newport in Wales for the NATO summit.
All right. So what is the process like behind the scenes for the diplomats who are planning these things? How long does it take to plan a high-level meeting like this?
There are 2 flavors of summits, basically. One is bilateral, where the president's coming to a capital to meet with the head of government of that state, and it's just a meeting between the two of them. The other kinds of meetings are multilateral summits. And of the 9 summits I did, I was counting that 5 were multilateral and 4 were bilateral. They're very different. If it's bilateral, you have some control over the program and the agenda. If it's multilateral, then usually the host organization organizes the summit. You have to negotiate with them.
And what is the follow-up like after a trip has ended?
The preparation is actually more important than the follow-up, unless there's some declaration or statement that comes out of a summit. When President Clinton came to Brussels, it resulted in a transatlantic declaration that actually was the blueprint for a lot of work we did afterwards. So what we're doing is following up on that. Sometimes you don't know what the effect is going to be or what's going to happen. When President Obama came to London in it was April 2009 for the G20 visit, the First Lady came too. And she gave a speech at a London school, which we thought was a nice thing to do, but we didn't think too much about it. Afterwards, that was what everybody remembered. Her speech at the school was electrifying.
So you had to spend a lot of time kind of following up with that.
London was very interested in this. When the First Lady spoke, it was to younger students. She talked about how they can have dreams and ambitions and aspirations and make dreams come true. And for Americans, it didn't sound like a remarkable thing. We're kind of used to that kind of statement. But a lot of these students in London actually never heard that before. And it rippled through the whole London city.
As you mentioned, there's kind of 2 different flavors. So in this case, it's a bilateral meeting. So what kind of preparation would be going into this kind of summit from, I guess, the Korean embassy is planning this one?
Yeah, there's 2 halves to some preparation. One is the substance. And that tends to be run between the 2 governments fairly high level. They're preparing for what will be discussed. When there's a summit, you always want to have the presidents accomplish something. It needs to look like they achieved purposes. So they call them deliverables. So negotiating the deliverables ahead of time is usually a months-long process. It's usually a good thing because if you have to work on deliverables, it means you're going to achieve something, and it makes governments actually find ways to coordinate and cooperate. The bad news can be if you know a summit's coming up, then you might wait to solve a problem until the presidents meet when you could have solved it sooner because you want it to be deliverable. But on the whole, they're positive things to do.
So it seems like the success of summits like this can come down to a lot of different factors. The relationship between the 2 countries that are meeting, current events, and even the personality of the leaders themselves. How do you see this playing out for President Park and Obama this week?
We have a long history of summitry between the United States and Republic of Korea. So we're used to doing summits between the 2 leaders of the countries. We did 3 visits from President Obama to Seoul just while I was there. One was a bilateral, one was for the G20, and one is for nuclear security. So the relationship is mature enough and broad enough now that when the presidents meet, they can actually talk about things other than problems between the 2 countries themselves. That makes the summits very different and actually more positive and productive. If we're going to meet with a country with which you have bilateral problems, Russia or China come to mind, then the agenda tends to focus on what the irritants are between the two governments. If it's a country that's a close ally, like Republic of Korea, they can talk about other things, how they can coordinate on working with North Korea or towards China or towards Russia or climate change or development. So it's a little bit more forward-looking.
And what factors in your experience make for a successful summit or a not so successful one? And how do you know when a summit can be considered successful?
No, there's a short-term effect and a long-term effect. And the short-term effect is you'll see the press report on how the summit went. And if they can find some problem, they'll certainly highlight it. So a successful summit is one that doesn't cause immediate ruffles in the media. But you can't always know how a summit went until sometimes long afterwards, especially on the substantive agenda. If they make an agreement, you won't know if the agreement actually worked out until maybe months or years later. So I don't like to judge these too quickly. There's also, I should mention too, that there's also two parts to an agenda, apart from the bilateral and multilateral dichotomy. There's also the difference between the president's visit with the other president, the actual agenda meeting government to government, and then the other events that go on involving a summit. And those are really important. If the president has time to go out and visit with people, speak at a university, visit something historical or cultural, that can have a huge impact. So this isn't just tourism. It's showing that the two countries have a relationship apart from the relationship between the two presidents. So when I was working in embassies, we were always trying hard to come up with ideas for that extra event you could do outside of the meeting proper.
So speaking of, can you tell us any interesting anecdotes about summit meetings that you've been involved with during your time in the Foreign Service?
Well, that's always the things you wouldn't expect to kind of stick out. I guess two that come to mind are the President Reagan visit to Strasbourg. Now, the First Lady, Nancy Reagan, does not eat much. And when the City Fathers of Strasbourg were preparing for the First Lady's visit to Strasbourg, Strasbourg is one of the world's great culinary capitals, some of the best food in the world. So Strasbourg chefs spent a long time preparing a fabulous meal for the Reagans. And Nancy Reagan didn't eat much because she never does. But in Strasbourg, the whole buzz after the summit was, why didn't she eat more? Didn't she like our food? Should we have served something different? So the food kind of overtook part of that visit. The other one was when President Clinton came to Brussels and spoke at the College of Europe class in the Grand Place in Brussels. We brought the College of Europe students from Bruges to come hear his speech. He should speak to students, historic surrounding, talking to young people. It had a lot of good aspects to it. But President Clinton was a very experienced, polished speaker. And when he wrote a speech and prepared it, he would pause after what we call applause lines. He did a point hard, wait for the applause, and then move on. The students from the College of Europe were so polite and maybe a little bit awed by the surroundings, they basically sat on their hands. So the president's speech had applause lines that kind of fell flat, it felt like. It wasn't the speech was bad, it was a great speech, but the students didn't react as expected. We wouldn't have planned for that.
So how do you deal with the unplanned things like that that you can't really predict?
Well, you can control all you can, but you just can't control everything. And so it helps to be a little bit nimble and just move on and try to work it out. The preparations are extremely thorough because you want to avoid things that are unexpected. I was impressed when President Obama came to London for the G20, for the bilateral meetings he held there with leaders. We did some at the ambassador's residence. And they were so careful in preparations, they even had a light meter to make sure that everyone at the summit table had the exact amount of light on the paper in front of them, so that we'd be overshadowed and have to have trouble seeing their paper. That seems like obsessively detailed, but if you can solve all the problems ahead of time and avoid surprises or bumps, you can have a more productive meeting.
A lot of eyes will be on these two presidents as they meet this week. Is there anything we should be looking out for?
My advice would be don't necessarily take the press's description of what happened. I mean, I love journalists. The media does a fabulous job. That's where most of us find out what happened. But in the case of a summit like this, when you actually can go back and read original sources. So what I'd recommend to people is they look at the whitehouse.gov or state.gov websites after the event and actually read the statements the presidents make, read the transcript of their press appearances, read the text of any agreement they come to, and see for yourself what happened.
Is there anything else that you think we should be paying attention to in terms of this summit or any other summits in the future?
Well, I'm a little concerned about this summit being a bit overshadowed by previous summits. I think Washington, D.C. might be a bit summited out. And the Pope's visit was a huge event for Washington, D.C. to the point where I think Xi Jinping's summit afterwards, his visit, was almost barely noticed. And that one was kind of in the shadows. I'm afraid President Park's visit may not get the attention it deserves. So again, I'll read the original sources and wait and see if the agreements come to fruition later. Don't judge them too quickly. And don't take the fact that it wasn't covered extensively to mean anything.
All right, great. Mark Tokola, Vice President of KEI, thank you very much for joining us today on Korean Context.
Thank you, Jenna.
That's all for this episode of Korean Context. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope to see you again next time.